Okay, Kinderlach, sit down, relax, and listen to a beautiful, happy vacation story. But you're only going to hear half of the story today, and you're going to have to tune in next week to hear the other half of the story. Shalom Goodman, called happy by his chaverim at the yeshiva because of his good temper and disposition, was suffering from hay fever. You know what that is. You sneeze a lot. So his parents decided that they were going to send him off to a place where he would be in an atmosphere where there is no pollen so that he wouldn't have the hay fever. The place has some of the most beautiful parts and views in the country, the White Mountains in New Hampshire, and what is most important, kosher hotels. So Shalom was agreeable, of course, to go. In such harmless manner started one of the most exciting adventures of Sholem's young but rich life. For Sholem was one of the smartest boys of his class at the yeshiva. He was greatly admired by his friends, and he loved his friends too. Together they studied and played, and it was great fun. So you can understand that Sholem was a bit sad when he had to say goodbye to his friends and bid them farewell till the beginning of yeshiva 4 weeks later. Soon Sholem and his parents were on the way to New Hampshire. The closer they came north towards the mountains, the more excited Sholem grew. He had been to the Catskill Mountains, but this ride through Vermont and New Hampshire was more beautiful than anything he had ever seen. Whiteface Mountain, Mountain Washington, the ski mobile, the aerial tramway, the flume, and so many other exciting sights and names on the road met his eager gaze. He was so excited. Finally, they arrived in Bethlehem, where his parents had rented a bungalow for 4 weeks. "Hey, look at this boy," shouted the kids in the street when Sholem stepped out of the bungalow. At first, Sholem did not quite understand why the boys and girls in the street stared at him. Then he realized it was his yarmulke which amused them. They were laughing from it. On the street in Brooklyn, where he lived, and where there was a yeshiva on practically every block, a boy would be stared at if he did not wear a yarmulke. When the kids started making fun of him here, Sholem was almost ready to go back inside and complain to his mother. Then he thought it over. "Hey, kids, what's the matter? Haven't you ever seen a boy with a yarmulke?" Sholem called out. "Why do you want to wear such a thing in the middle of a hot summer day up here in vacation time?" asked one boy. "We wear a yarmulke too when we go to Talmud Torah 3 times a week. We have it in our pockets. And when we go into the shul where we have our classes, we put it on." "Well, why do you put it on then?" asked one of their companions. Apparently, this boy did not even go to Talmud Torah. "Oh, that's simple," they answered him knowingly. "We take a lesson in Hebrew in the house of God. That's why we cover our heads out of respect." "Very true," said Sholem, encouraged by his unexpected discussion. "But do you think God is only in the synagogue?" "Of course not. God is everywhere. We learnt that in the Talmud Torah," replied another boy who knew what a yarmulke was. "Well, that is exactly why we kids from the yeshiva and all Jewish boys who really know what the Torah is and what God wants of us wear a yarmulke always," Sholem said. "Oh, stop the talk and let's play baseball," said one of the kids. "Let's see if this guy with the rabbi's cap can swing a bat." Well, Sholem Goodman wasn't exactly Joe DiMaggio, but Friday afternoons he was quite a hero on the sandlot behind the yeshiva and could really swing a bat. And boy, could he run. "Whoop! Look! His yarmulke is flying," shouted the kids when he was rounding the bases. Sholem Goodman, who had never before been in Bethlehem, now made quite a hit with the kids. Before they knew it, he became their respected leader because he knew an answer to everything and made them feel quite proud of being Jewish. A week after first becoming acquainted with the boys, they decided to climb Mount Cannon over the old trail and come down by the aerial tramway. Sholem had seen the steel basket glide through the air quite a few times, and he was very happy to join the boys on this trip, though he had never been before climbed a mountain. "It's nothing. I've done it twice already," said Harry, the Talmud Torah boy, who had become quite attached to Sholem during the few days of their acquaintance. "My dad has even climbed Mount Washington, which is over 6,000 feet high, and he promised to take us along next week if we take this climb up Mount Cannon, which is only 4,000 feet high. Just make sure you have a good pair of shoes, a handy bag of lunch, a few band-aids, a piece of cord, and a flashlight. A windbreaker might come in handy, too." So, Sholem was quite excited over his first mountain climbing adventure. There were seven boys between the ages of 11 and 14. Barry was the leader because he had been twice up the trail. "It should not take us more than 4 to 5 hours altogether if we figure in 1 hour's rest at the Foresters, less than halfway up, where the really hard climb begins." The weather seemed ideal for such a climb. The bus brought them to the beginning of the trail that started in a trailer camp, a few minutes away from the road that led to the front of Mount Cannon. Here, the steel cables of the tramway swing through the air in a steep climb. It was not very hot, and the going was a cinch for the eager young boys, who not knowing what was ahead of them, had lots of fun passing the older people going in the same direction, but at a much slower and wiser speed. Sholem taught the boys a little niggun, and he had the one that he had learned at the yeshiva, called Ooh-Ah, Ooh-Ah, which sounded like an Indian song. The boys, who never in their life had sung a niggun, kept on singing it all the way up the first part, when the going was still easy, and their young bodies with their strong muscles and easy breath. Then, when they could not sing any longer, Sholem told them the story of the rabbi who had composed this niggun while lying on the operation table. He had not needed any ether because the niggun had so affected him that he did not feel the pain of the operation. Thus, Sholem kept on telling stories about saintly men, about holy tzaddikim, which he had heard at the yeshiva. The time just seemed to fly by. Before they knew it, they had covered about a third of the way to Echo Lake, where the forester's hut invited them all to avail themselves of the hut's primitive but ample facilities. "I won't be back till 5 this afternoon," read the note left behind by the warden. "But make yourselves at home. There is a penny jar where you can leave the money for whatever provisions you take." Indeed, there was a large jar full of money open to anyone. The door to the hut was always open for people in need, and there was not a single person who would betray this trust. Naturally, the boys of Sholem's group had their lunch bags with them, so they did not need anything, but they enjoyed the good cold water from a deep well outside the hut. The other people who came into the hut to watch the boys wash their hands and make a bracha and bench, say grace together, under the leadership of Sholem, were amazed and deeply impressed. Then the boys went in for a swim in the dark, blue, cold, refreshing water of the lake. Now they were ready to start on the difficult sky trail, which the legend on a sign outside the hut said went from New Hampshire all the way down to the Green Mountains to Georgia. The weather had become cooler and the sun was cloudy. But the sun did not matter very much, for when they entered the trail, they got soon into the thick of the forest, where little of the sun's rays came in altogether. After 50 minutes of steep climbing, the three youngest members of the group complained that they could not go any further. Fortunately, some of the older people who had been in the hut together with the boys volunteered to take them back to the hut and from there down to the station of the tramway. Secretly, Sholem wished he had the courage to join the three boys who turned back. For the climbing became ever more difficult, at least for him, who had no experience at all, and who had used up a lot of his energy telling stories on the first part of the climb to the Echo Lake hut. At the first chance, when they rested, he took out his little sitter, which went with him wherever he went, and he said the Tefillat HaDerech, explaining to the other three boys what the words meant. Until that time, he had not realized that even such a small excursion might have its dangers, and he, as well as his companions, felt better when they continued on the trail. Had Sholem, Barry, and the other two boys, Frank and Dave, known what lay ahead of them, they surely would have felt even better about having entrusted their lives and welfare into the hands of God. For unknowingly, the sky, which could not be seen through the thick treetops and rocks overhead, had turned dark. But then, all of a sudden, they heard some noise. We're going to stop here, Kindler. Next week, part two. And we'll soon find out what those noises were. In the meanwhile, I hope you enjoyed the first part of the story. And remember next week at the same time to tune in so that you will be able to hear part two, which is, wow, really exciting.